This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. It is spring game week. Specifically, you know, we're like, I don't know, 50 hours and change away, like 55 hours. I don't know. It's 2 days plus, but the spring game is literally in front of us. To talk about it is the entire Orange Bloods gang. It's Anwar. It's me. It's Jason. It's Alex. It's Dustin. Mouseketeers, hola. I'm probably more gassed up to watch this version of the spring game and whatever it is, because spring games always, I think, leave people, I don't know, bored. And you go there expecting great football and you get kind of an average practice. But I'm really interested to see what so many of these young players have in them, whether it's Brew McCoy or Jordan Whittington or any number of the guys on defense. This is one of the more interesting spring games, I think, that we've had queued. I think we probably say that every year, but it feels like I'm excited, and I don't feel like I get excited very often.
I think it's exciting because we've reached a point where the spring game is back to being what it was a long time ago, what we're used to. It's like, okay, there's not a lot of question marks. They've got the quarterback situation figured out. Let's get a look at all these young guys. And I can't remember the last time we've been able to go into a spring game with that kind of approach. Like, we know Texas is going to be at least pretty good. We don't know quite how good, but they're not going to be a disaster. And it's
an opportunity. It helps if they don't suck, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think back to, you know, when I first started going to Texas, like, I think on Orange Bloods, you guys used to have a contest about, like, which true freshman would be the true freshman of the game. And I remember people picking, like, Henry Melton as a running back. And we're not at in those days yet, but we're kind of getting to the point where there's so much excitement about, okay, what's Malcolm Epps going to do? What's Brendan Eagles going to do? What's Jordan Whittington going to do? And all of these young players that aren't necessarily starters are the kind of the most exciting part about the spring game is getting a look at those guys and seeing what's next, seeing the backup quarterback. And I can't remember the last time we went to a spring game with kind of that outlook about the roster. And that speaks to where the program is for the first time in a long time.
Anwar, is excitement too much, or should it be some other word?
Well, I think if you're a Texas fan, you should definitely be excited. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would think so. I mean, there's a reason to be excited because, you know, now you're talking about building on success. And there's no more, you know, hopes and dreams and the, you know, the guesswork of, well, maybe this is going to be this or this is going to be that. There is the anticipation that, hey, what is this team? What is our good team look like, as opposed to what is our bad team that we're hoping might be good? What does that look like? Or what is our average team that we hope could be good? What does that look like? No, it's more about, hey, this is a good team, 10-win team. You feel like you got the coach who's definitely the man for the job. You got the quarterback who's definitely the man for the job. You know, you could say what you want to say about some of the assistants, but the majority, you probably say those are the men for the job, and you got a fan base that is excited about everything. You can't roll out an OB Letterman jacket this week if this team isn't good and there isn't, like, excitement about the program.
So what's everybody want to see the most? Let's start there. Alex, I mean, I feel like I might know the answer to this, but of all the things, if we could put a spotlight camera on one thing, one player, one whatever, what's your spotlight camera? What is the thing that of all the things you're most curious about on Saturday?
I mean, it's probably not on a player, or maybe even, I mean, it's, I mean, I want to see if this. Well, for one, I'm interested to see if they go ones versus ones or ones versus two. Do you guys remember how Herman does it? I get it mixed up every year.
It's ones versus twos.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, I want to see how Casey Thompson looks versus that ones defense. I think that, look, man, I've been saying it and saying it, and the people on the board are just, you know, the people on the board are the people on the board, and they're always going to see things through the best possible, most optimistic lens, especially during this time of year when, you know, we haven't seen a football product on the field. But I've been saying, man, like, based on what I've seen in practice, we're in this bizarro world now where the offensive line and the quarterback and stuff are actually good, right? The running backs are good, and, like, and Todd Orlando's wizardry on defense that had been – you know, something that Texas fans have sort of hung their hats on for the last couple of years is you know, that linebacker group is thin, man. They're thin. And that defensive line group, I know Dustin loves Taquan Graham. You know, Todd Orlando talked this week about how he's due for a step up. But, you know, in the middle, we have Gerald Wilbon, and we even have a guy like Keandre Coburn, who's a redshirt freshman, starting to push him. So that should tell you about where Gerald Wilbon is as far as that next step that he probably should have been taking here coming into his senior year, like we were beginning to see out of Puna Ford, like we were beginning to see out of Chris Nelson, et cetera. And then Malcolm Roach, I mean, I think everybody has seen that he hasn't really been the same since Charlie Strong left, and he could not play in that defensive end linebacker hybrid sort of Fox role that he was really successful in as a freshman. So I'm just, you know, across that front line, I'm interested in seeing just, you know, I guess this could be ones versus twos that could be their saving grace a little bit, but I'm interested to see how this defense looks, about how that front five looks as far as how the defense is. And then with the first team defense, I'm interested in seeing how the cornerbacks line up with the starters, because we've just seen a whole myriad of different combinations back there. Most recently, we've seen – I mean, this thing started out being Anthony Cook and Kobe Boyce back there. Now we're to the spot where towards the last practices that we were seeing – and even from clips from the closed scrimmages that they've put up on Instagram, if you take them and like freeze them and look who else out there on the football field, it's been Deshaun Jameson and Jalen Green who have sort of really stepped up and been able to take advantage of the time that Anthony Cook was having to miss a few practices there. I said from the very beginning of practice, again, to the chagrin of a lot of posters on the board, that Kobe Boyce probably wasn't going to be in that starting spot for very long. And I said, why are you guys complaining to me about this for saying that a guy that was burned every 42 snaps last season is probably going to be overtaken by a guy like a Jalen Green, like a Deshaun Jameson that has a ton more potential than he does? I never understood it. But still, that has come to fruition. And so I'll be interested to see, is it Jalen Green and Anthony Cook? Do they like it better where like Deshaun Jameson is at a field corner and you get one of those bigger guys like a Cook or a Jalen Green over at the boundary corner? How they're going to work that thing out? And then especially how they're going to handle the DBs. We know no Brandon Jones, no Caden Stearns in this football game. So that could change things up a lot, but I'll still be interested to see if they do kind of mix in any of these dime packages, and when they do, how they handle Joseph Osai, who's a guy who I think needs to stay on the field even in dime, despite the fact that he's the B-backer, and traditionally the B-backer has been taken off the field when this team goes to dime. From what I've seen about Dele Adeyewe, I'm not sure that he's fast enough to stay on the field during dime. So I think it would be cool to see maybe during the spring game some sort of packages where you leave Joseph Osai outside, you let him rush, maybe have one linebacker in the middle with that extra DB coming in into the box. Now, with that being said, I don't know if they have the pure numbers to get that done here in the spring with Jones and Stearns hurt, but coming into the summer, that'll be certainly something I'll be looking for, and it would be neat to see, you know, some sort of wrinkle like that here in the spring game.
And Ketch, you know what's interesting, Ketch, is that last year, you know, just kind of piggybacking off of what Alex was talking about, like last year, the big story of spring was that the offense, because of where they were in the install, the defense had to run a base defense. For the offense.
About that.
Yeah, you remember that? And so that was one of our talking points last spring, was like, hey man, they've got to scale it back on defense because this offense, you know, needs some time to install. And here we are kind of on the flip side where we're more focused on the defense because the offense keeps winning every single scrimmage.
That's a fantastic point, Anwar. I completely forgot that at the beginning of last spring, one of the coordinators, I think, or might have even been Herman, just mentioned that they were playing base basically to help out. And then it felt like it was the kind of thing that Herman tried to walk back the rest of the spring. Like, no, we're not completely, because people did have a bit of a miniature meltdown about, you know, that little nugget of where the offense is and where it needed to be. And you're right. It's a Anwar point for you. If this was around the horn, I would give you like 10 points for that little nugget. I would Tony Reale you up like 10 Thank points. You. Yeah. Thank no, you'd be in the lead for the final. While I've got you, Anwar, like for you, what's your thing? Alex gave us a bit of a dissertation.
Your, I did great.
The thing that you want the most is what?
It really revolves around the defense. I think we're at the point, and I don't want Jason to get started as far as where he thinks about the offense or the receivers, but I do believe we're at the point where you feel good about the offense. You know, you feel good about the offensive line. It seems like there's talent on offense. It's just which talented players eventually merge into starters. I don't think that seems to be any real concern. But for me, it's a defense of what they look like because, you know, I will stay true to this and I'll stay consistent with this. You know, Texas only really has two starters returning on defense. And both of those guys are injured right now with Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones. So, you know, Texas and Todd Orlando faces a pretty huge task of filling and plugging a lot of holes. Guys who are injured. You know, you'll have guys that hit the campus and later in the summer. But for me, it is really looking at, okay, well, what does this offensive line really look like? What does Malcolm Roach, you know, really look like? What does Will Bond and Colburn, what does that battle, you know, over there look like? What did some of these, the JUCO guys, you know, that, you know, sometimes you hear they're being a little bit overmatched, and, you know, you hear pretty good things about the cornerbacks, and Alex went into a good explanation of that. Still a little bit thin at the safety position at this moment. You know, they'll be healthier, obviously, once fall camp rolls around, but I still think that this defense is my focus as to what these guys are able to do, especially against an offense that, I mean, in the last scrimmage catch, for people I spoke to who witnessed that scrimmage, the literal description I received was the offense kicked the defense's ass. And I spoke to Herman afterwards, and he didn't seem too thrilled about the defensive performance. Now it's a give and take, right? You should be happy about the offense, and, you know, it's a scrimmage. So whatever one side excels, you worry about the other side excels and you worry about the other one. But for me, this entire offseason is, can this defense get right and be good enough so when week two rolls around and they face LSU, they're good to go.
Dustin, what do you got? Let's finish out our most, you know, coveted watch list first.
Am I going to be the first guy that mentions Jordan Whittington?
Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan Whittington. That is my dude. Like, I cannot wait to see what he does, how they use them. Anwar had a great nugget recently. I forget where it was, but about the personnel usage in, you know, Texas tinkering with the idea of putting those guys in the backfield together, which I think should really, really excite Texas fans because they're both dynamic with the ball in their hands, but they're both also really talented pass catchers. So I am fired up to watch Jordan Whittington. Of all the players on the roster, he's at the top of my list right now, because we know this offense just desperately needs some more explosive elements, a guy that on the field that can touch the ball, break a tackle, you know, get that 60-yard gain or create that explosive play touchdown or things like that. So, and I think everybody's already made some really good points about the defense, and that'll certainly be something to follow with the injuries and things like that and how the young guys look, the linebackers mainly. I mean, it sounds like Todd Orlando is growing in confidence with the defensive line, but it'll be something to watch obviously as well. But for me, it starts with Jordan Whittington. I mean, that is the guy I am most excited to see how they use him, how he looks as a running back. He's gotten really high reviews all spring, and I really think that he's positioned to be a big time playmaker for this offense next year, an offense that really needs that sort of punch. It needs, you know, Keandre Ingram needs another guy in the backfield that can really help shoulder that load like Trey Watson did last year. So he's definitely at the top of my list. And then I think just below that, guys like Malcolm Epps, who we've heard a lot about. I mean, he's a guy somebody mentioned to me after the first practice. It was another guy that was mentioned after their first scrimmage. It seems like all spring he's been a consistent playmaker, which I think when he was signed, I think we all just kind of assumed he's probably going to end up being a tight end, and here he is playing receiver and apparently playing it well. So he's up there on my list as well. Brendan Eagles, obviously Brew McCoy, but really Whittington is my guy by far that I'm really fired up to see, because I think that he's poised to have a true breakout season as a freshman.
Mr. Sukumel, is it as easy as ditto?
Pretty much. Dustin pretty much said every guy that was in my mind, along with Casey Thompson. You know, I mean, you know what you're getting with, you know, a guy like Colin Johnson, even Keontae Ingram for the most part. I think we know what we're going to get from the offensive line for the most part. But those young guys, yeah, I'm curious to see who's going to step up. And, like, I mean, I'm trying to take my own advice on Jordan Whittington and be like, all right, slow down, Jason, let make him prove it to you. But, you know, like Almer said, I had a couple guys who were at practice last Friday, so the day before the scrimmage, and one dude told me, this might have been a slight exaggeration, but he said basically every time he turned around, Whittington was getting the ball. He goes, man, he probably had about 20 touches, a lot of them on receptions and stuff, a couple of them for big gains. So, like Dustin and I think everybody else, I am really excited and curious to see what Jordan Whittington can do. Brew McCoy, his first kind of live action. Malcolm Epps, we've heard good things about him time after time. I heard good things about him last week again at the same practice I was referencing. But, yeah, I think Dustin pretty much nailed it for me. I do want to see how Casey Thompson fares, because Ketch, you know, I've said it last week, I think they're going to need him at some point. So let's see how comfortable he looks out there, especially going against the ones. But, yes, Jordan Whittington, to me, head and shoulders above any other storyline that I'm following coming into this game. Let's see how active he is. Let's see how Jordan Whittington looks.
Man, it's that simple for me. I want to see Brew McCoy, and I want to see, you know, Jordan Whittington seems like one of the most exciting incoming offensive recruits. It's a non-quarterback in a while. Like, I'm maybe Malcolm Brown. You have to go back to the Malcolm Brown, Jonathan Gray, back-to-back five-star running back class, but it feels like Jordan Whittington is a guy that I'm – you know, because if he's as good as everybody thinks he is, the transformation that this offense will have with a better offensive line, with like game changers at running back, I think would have it. Would, you know, I feel much better about everything if, you know, Jordan Whittington is, you know, we've seen, I mean, if he has a Jamal Charles like freshman impact where you don't need 1,000 yards from him, but, you know, you put him on the field and every other game he produces a monster play because he's got monster talent. It has a chance to just, you know, be the difference, I think, between this team being competing for a Big 12 championship and possibly winning it. Let's talk about the defense. I want to ask you guys a question. Is it possible? I guess my theory on the defense is I'm going in because the offense does seemingly seem ahead of the defense, and because there are a lot of missing pieces that I think we'll see in the fall, certainly in the secondary. Can we make it as simple as, hey, let's accentuate the positives, treat it as found money. If we show up on Saturday and Taquan Graham looks great, awesome. Like, it looks like he's a guy that's evolved. It looks like, you know, you can envision him being a guy that's a more impactful contributor, like positives. And like just accentuate those instead of freaking out if the defense looks sloppy because it's not quite ready for prime time against an offense that might be more ready for prime time. So I guess I'm asking in a very long, convoluted way, is there a way for us to escape overreactions if the defense doesn't look great on Saturday, or if it just doesn't look good at all? Or should we prepare for like a miniature Chernobyl on Saturday night? The offense does something that it hasn't done in years, which is like, you know, score a bunch of points in a spring game and look great. But now we're on that other side of the coin where if one thing looks great, the other thing looks bad. And I'm just wondering what the reaction from the fan base will be to a defense, potentially, if it looks like it has in some of these other practices on war that Tom Herman hasn't been absolutely thrilled about.
Well, I definitely think you'll have a little bit of a meltdown. I mean,
there's always going to be, we're talking about Orange Bloods.
I disagree. Fans like offense. They'll be excited, man.
Zero-sum game. Like, they don't get it. The offense has to be awesome. The defense has to be awesome. They don't get it. Like Omar was saying, like, if one thing's good, the other thing's not going to be as good. They don't get it.
I mean, I think if Casey Thompson goes and light it up, I mean, Alex will be, you know, strutting around like a peacock and throwing a middle finger to Sukumel.
10 touchdowns to Brew. I'll never hear the end of it.
Did you guys ever make that bet, by the way, that it was the 500-yard bet? Was that made?
$20, $25.
Yeah,
that's touchdowns. Don't forget the 6 touchdowns now.
I mean, to your point, though, Catch, yeah, I mean, I think – there's not high expectations. I mean, Sam is going to be Sam, right? Sam should do what he needs to do against, you know, the second team offense, defense rather. But if Casey goes out and against the first team, you know, some people may say, all right, well, you know, maybe Brandon Jones isn't there and Caden Stearns isn't there. And it may excuse that. But if that does occur and they're just doing what they've been doing, I guess, because don't forget, when Texas won the first scrimmage, at least the offense won this first scrimmage, Casey Thompson was the quarterback. And so, and then Sam was the quarterback for the second scrimmage. So, I think defense is on everyone's radar. And while they're going to be really excited about Casey, like to your point, Catch, if Casey and Jason, I think you made it, if Casey has to play, you feel confident about that. But for a defense that, don't forget, has been kind of a slow out the gate over the past 2 years, and maybe a lot of that had to just do with Maryland, but it took a little bit of time. I thought the defense played a little bit better towards the end of the year than the beginning part of the year. And again, you got Kyler Murray is Kyler Murray, right? So you give him excuse as far as that goes. But I definitely think that, to your point, defense doesn't look good. You'll have some highs and lows, but that'll be a definite talking point.
Yeah, the answer is always to prepare for some sort of meltdown if one side of the football looks not as good as the other side. Because
we haven't had a non-Shaka meltdown in months.
yeah, that's true. Yeah, when was recruiting signing day? February. Yeah, it's been a couple months. It was interesting too. Going back to the end of last season, it was like there was a shift in the middle of the season where people stopped throwing so much venom at Tim Beck and started to direct it some at Todd Orlando. I mean, there was a point where people on the board as a whole were really, really frustrated with Todd Orlando. And of course, the defense ended up finishing the season well. But yeah, I mean, his honeymoon period is definitely over. I'm not implying that he's in any sort of trouble or anything like that. The guy is still one of the game's best defensive coordinators. But yeah, I think if the defense goes out there and gets shredded, especially if the number two offense goes out there and moves the ball all the time against the number one defense, and knowing what the injury situation is at some positions like linebacker, yeah, I think that there is going to be some sort of mini meltdown on the board. I mean, people will be excited about the offense, but they know Sam Ehlinger is going to be good. I think that they are entering this game with more questions about the defense than the offense.
I don't know. I disagree a little bit. I know the fans, they want to see the scoreboard lit up in games and even in the spring game. I think that would be 90% of the focus. I also think fans will understand, hey, the defense has a lot of people out to injury or some key components out to injury. I think the fans will look at it like, hey, they have faith in Todd Orlando. I don't think you'll see if the roles were reversed and the offense struggled for whatever reason, then it'd be an all-out meltdown. But I think if the offense marches up and down the field, I think fans are going to be excited. I mean, I think that's what they want to see. I don't think we'd see a meltdown at all. Maybe I'm totally misreading things, but I just think that's what fans want to see in these types of games. It's the reason Mac Brown always staged big kick returns and punt returns to get people excited. They want big plays.
I kind of miss the days on where there was a point. I'm curious to who remembers this. There was a point about 15 years ago where in every spring game, I swear to God, it seemed like Mac Brown set it up so that there would be a kickoff return for a touchdown to open the scrimmage.
It could be like a fourth string walk-on who'd take it back too.
It was for about 5 years in a row, the spring game would open up with a kickoff return for a touchdown. And it was always felt hammed up, like, you know, to try to get the crowd pumped up and to throw them a bone. And, you know, by the end, it was like, this is pretty obvious. They're not even trying to tackle. Like, they just let him walk down the field by himself.
So it was like a Pro Bowl is essentially what it was like.
Because in a Pro Bowl game, you might have a Sean Taylor out there, one guy who might just light a dude up for fun. This was choreographed special teams, like, faux success. And it was completely done with the intention of, like, giving the crowd something at the end of the, hey, remember that kick return for a touchdown? That was worth us coming down here and spending 2 hours watching what was otherwise a drab affair. Let's play a little game. I'm making this up. It's like a stock buying game. The defense is clearly going to be the biggest question mark. I mean, just, we don't know. We're talking about the spring game on Saturday in the context of defense might get it handed to them. But that being said, somebody on the field, one of these young guys, one of these, maybe it's Malcolm Roach, who's constantly getting praise from Tom Herman, who I want everybody to give their defensive player that they're predicting on Saturday people will be buzzing about. So this is scooping
DeSean Jameson.
You're DeSean Jameson all the way, huh?
Yes. Yes.
On Saturday night.
Damn it, Alex. You should have waited your turn, Alex. Maybe someone else.
I didn't want anybody to steal it.
that's how you do the damn thing, Alex. You say it before anybody else can, and then they can't take it away from you. You guys can copy Alex. We just all know that Alex is predicting that on Saturday, people are going to be claiming to be the president of the DeSean Jameson fan club, and Alex is telling us he already has dibs. Casey Thompson's his offensive guy. DeSean Jameson is his defensive guy. What about you, Dustin?
Jameson's a good one. I'm going to Marvion Overshawn just because I think that they're going to use him creatively, and people are going to be reminded just how physical and how talented he was as a recruit coming out of high school.
Sukumel?
You know what, man? Jalen Green is my first choice outside of Jameson, but I tell you what, maybe it's because I'm just really curious to see him myself. I'm going to go wild card, man. I'm going Caleb Johnson, the JUCO linebacker. I want to see this guy, you know, see if his speed translates in the spring game like it did, you know, some of the film I've seen of him. So,
but you're not predicting that it will. You're just throwing his name out there.
If I'm predicting a player who I think people will be buzzing about, which was your question, aside from Jameis, I'll go Jalen Green just because I think that's an NFL talent and the light's going to come on at some point. But, yeah, I'll just say it wouldn't shock me to see Caleb Johnson create some buzz either.
Anwar?
I'll take the easy choice. Just say Malcolm Roach. I mean, him against a second team offensive line should be pretty easy. Should be light work.
I mean, nobody mentioned Joseph Asai. Can I at the end sneak in and just grab the guy that most people seem to think might be the best player on the defense in the fall? Maybe.
He won't be the best player on the defense in the fall.
There's a lot of people that think, like, there's a lot of excitement with that dude.
I think to be on the best player on the defense, you got to be on the field for more than 35-40% of the time. But we'll see. I mean, they could scheme up ways to get him out there more than they've gotten the B-backer out there.
Well, I mean, earlier in the podcast, you mentioned that Osai's a guy that should be on the field as many reps as he can be.
Right.
At this point, based on what you've seen, Dean, you think that that's far-fetched?
Well, I think in this game, probably not, because they're, like I talked about, I'm not sure that they have the numbers to show us what they're going to be doing in dime. Yeah. But I'd like to think in dime, maybe they'll go to some sort of speed package where they use them off the edge.
I think the middle linebacker spot, I need to practice saying his name. I think the middle linebacker whose name I struggle with, Adeoye, I think, is that right, by the way? Is that how you say it?
Call him Dele.
Yes.
Yeah. Dele. I feel like, you know, we haven't talked about the DeGabriel Floyd thing enough. We haven't talked about it at all in the podcast yet, but we talked about it last week. But to get then confirmation coming out of that, you know, his situation is serious enough that he's going on the shelf. DeGabriel Floyd's presence was great because it gave Texas potentially a viable solution at an important position that's unproven in terms of who's expected to man that position. I don't know that we fully can grasp the importance of that loss of Floyd. It puts a lot of pressure on a guy that wasn't good enough last year to see the field very much. And he's got to kind of be Texas desperately needs that guy to be good now. And if he can anchor that defense, ready or not, like, that's what this team needs. Because if he can't, I mean, Alex, you tell me, like, the shuffle has to begin. If we get to a place in August where he's just not ready for prime time, I think all kinds of things have to be tweaked at that point in terms of how the linebacker position sets up.
I think he'll be, I think he'll be ready. I think he's got a lot of Anthony Wheeler to him. And like Anthony Wheeler was a guy that they didn't necessarily get off the field as often in the dime packages last year as I thought they should have. And now that with the fact that Joseph Asai has come on like this, it's just a, you know, in those packages, man, in third and long, especially if you're going to be going to dime and you need the guy inside to cover a whole lot of space, why are you going to have a downhill thumper in there like Dele? I mean, I think he's got some decent change of direction. I think that, you know, he can come downhill really well, but we can't forget, man, that guy ran a 4.98 verified Nike, you know, a time in his 40-yard dash coming out. So he technically probably doesn't even have the speed of an Anthony Wheeler, and he's just a little bit stiff. I think that if you get Jeffrey McCulloch, who's one of the faster linebackers that Texas has had outside of like Gary Johnson, and you can get him on the field with Joseph Osai in some kind of capacity there with, you know, along with six DBs and three down linemen, I think all of a sudden, man, that's going to be a defense that even the fastest of Big 12 offenses are going to have trouble dealing with, because just at every level of the field, you have players who are going to threaten you, especially when you consider these big box safeties and these big nickels that Texas has, like the DeMarvion Overshones, like the guy who I think is probably going to end up being the best player on the Texas defense, if not this year, next year, BJ Foster. So that would be my plan. I don't think we're going to see much of that in the spring game, though, mainly because for two reasons. One, they don't like to show off a whole lot of, you know, crazy sub-package wrinkles in the spring game. And two, just like we've been talking about, the numbers just aren't there with the DBs. There are too many of them hurt.
I think a day away reminds me of a cross between Aaron Harris and Robert Killebrew.
With a little bit of Steve Edmund.
He's got like the foot speed, but the football playing skills of a guy like Harris, who was never fleet of foot, never played in the NFL, but was an All-American linebacker at Texas and started on two Rose Bowl teams, including a national championship team. But he was like a 5-flat 40-yard dash kind of a guy. But man, the thing about a day away that I don't know yet is he just seems like an undisciplined football player, that it felt like them knowing for sure that he would get his, I'm not necessarily talking about like the 15-yard penalties, although that's a thing. I just mean being in the right place at the right time. And it, I mean, my God, if you don't have a bunch of great plays, that's one thing, but you can't have negative plays. And it's the thing about him yet that I don't know that this team has. And the backdrop behind that is that I feel like we've all been waiting for Jeffrey McCulloch, Dustin, to be the star that for years
I know I have.
You know, like we've thought that this is when he arrived, this may be the best linebacker prospect that Texas has had since Sergio Kendall, or, you know, fill in the blanks of other guys that came in with really high credentials, and just hasn't happened yet. And I've never gotten the sense that the coaches trust him. So if a day away can't be trusted, and maybe he can, that's one of the things that we don't know yet. I mean, he's completely unproven. The guy that if they have to have somebody kind of slide in, I think, and navigate that, then turns into a guy that we've all thought was going to be a star, but hasn't yet been produced, hasn't been productive consistently, and he hasn't been a guy the coaches have trusted.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't know what that says about him, considering how much we saw Brecken Hager out there last year when he like literally like was doing things that seemed like off script all the time. So yeah, it's, you know, we've been waiting for this guy to turn the flashes into steady production all the time, but they're going to reach a point where they're going to have to play him. I think they're just going to have to put him out there and see what happens, because there's just not a lot of bodies to go around at the linebacker position right now. And you've got these guys that are talented in their different ways, but that, I mean, kind of fit in different ways as well. So I think that they're going to have to get creative. I think that it's going to make guys like Overshown and Foster and kind of these do-it-all safeties that can play near the line of scrimmage, it's going to make these guys even more valuable, because I don't think that Texas fully trusts some of those linebackers that those returning guys, and they're counting on some of these young players, and Floyd was going to be counted on to play a significant role in all of these things. So it'll be curious to see how they manage that position, because with a guy like McCullough, there's going to be eventually a point where they're just going to have to say, we got to just put this guy on the field all the time and see what happens, because there's not many other guys, and especially many other guys that have his sort of athleticism and talent. And at some point that has to make up for whatever it is that's keeping him from being a guy that's on the field all the time.
Anybody else want to jump in on this second level of the defense conversation? Anwar, what's, you know, I mean, I've read the reports, but what's your vibe on Herman's true thoughts or vibe on that group? Super talented, lots of options. Clearly they could play dime a lot, so linebacker doesn't have to be as important as it would be if, you know, Orlando were running kind of a conventional 3-4 defense. But, you know, this is part of the big question mark of this team.
Well, first and foremost, you know what's going to happen after the spring game. You know, no matter what's going to happen, he's going to say this is just one practice. And, you know, and he's going to trust what he saw all the other times. And so whatever we see, we're going to blow out of proportion. And he's going to, you know, put the wet blanket on and say, hey, guys, it is what it is. Just one practice. Now, that being said, the one thing, area of concern that I think, and Dustin's kind of touched on it, which is going to be the linebacker, because they are thin. I mean, I think they're so thin at linebacker catch that they have to sit down with DeMarvion Overshown at some point and say, listen, I know you want to do the safety thing, dude, but we really need you for at least one more year. Would you consider going back to linebacker for just one season and then go back to the safety position? Like, I think that's how thin they are. I think they're thin enough where, Ellis, I don't know how many grad transfer linebackers there are out there, but they've got to kick the tires on that kind of market. If there's guys who go into the transfer portal, because we're going to have the second wave of free agency in college football after spring games, and that's when the second wave of free agency is going to be transfer portal. See if there's guys going into there that you maybe can hope could get waivers and provide you some at least some depth at that position. But the sense I get from speaking to, you know, Herman and then speaking to others in the building, it's just that linebacker position seems the one big area of concern right now.
Let's go wild card podcasting. Jason, the one thing that we haven't discussed yet about the spring game that you think we should be discussing about the spring game is what?
Weather. Recruit.
Oh, yeah. Has anybody got updated weather on that? What's the updated weather forecast?
Last I saw, someone was saying they think it's supposed to clear out by the evening. That was yesterday evening. I haven't checked it this morning. But, you know, A&M and Oklahoma have both moved theirs to Friday night. If Texas plays this right and the weather blows through earlier, this could really work in Texas's favor, because that's going to impact A&M and Oklahoma's probably visitor lists, you know, guys that were planning on coming on Saturday. A couple of them have already said, I can't make it now that they've moved it to Friday. So Texas will be the only game in town, if you will, or of the big three in the area, having its game on Saturday night now. And that visitor list for UT spring game keeps growing, whereas I think A&M and Oklahoma's is going to probably shrink, and guys that they were expecting to show up won't be able to make it. So, you know, I hope the weather holds off, A, for the recruit's sake, B, just for fans' sake. You know, this, we talked about it. We opened the podcast by saying how this is maybe a more exciting spring game than Texas fans have experienced in the last several years, and hopefully the weather doesn't put a damper on it. So keep your fingers crossed that stuff blows through in the morning.
Anwar.
I mean, Ketch, how do you replace a guy like Andrew Beck? You know, that's how do you replace a guy like Andrew Beck? I don't even know. I guess I'll just be watching Cade Brewer and just thinking about Andrew Beck the entire time.
Hey, Andrew Beck's name has now been referenced 45 minutes into this podcast ahead of little Jordan Humphreys.
Well, he runs a faster 40 time than little Jordan.
Oh, damn, boy, you had to do that.
Sadly, that's not saying much.
He just dropped it. Andrew Beck runs a faster 40 than Lil Jordan.
I mean, Alex would tell you who's going to get drafted first.
Who's going to get drafted first, Alex?
Oh, I mean, I think right now it's a toss-up. It really is. It's probably, I don't know, man. Like, it's like,
Andrew Beck had like three top 30 visits. I mean, that's probably about what little Jordan Humphrey had. I think that's a complete toss up. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and made me choose one, I'd probably say little Jordan. But I mean, they could, for all we know, they could both go undrafted. Andrew Beck could go fifth round and little Jordan could go seventh round just as easily, though.
Alex, what is the honor was short and sweet. Just threw that Andrew Beck thing out there.
Just for fun.
We also haven't argued about anything yet, which is disappointing. Alex, what about you? What is something that surprisingly we haven't talked about yet?
Well, I mean, Malcolm Epps has been all the talk, but Brennan Eagles is the GOAT. So I think he's sort of the wild card. People say like, oh, that guy. You know, I've been trying to just like that guy's turned the corner and he's developed and he's looking like what everybody was hoping he'd look like as a freshman. And that's how he looks now. Brennan Eagles looks like the guy that people were hoping that he would develop into. And he hadn't been getting as much talk as Malcolm Epps. It's been a bigger surprise. But so I think my wild card for the spring game will be Brennan Eagles.
Fascinating little tidbit about Brennan Eagles. I talked to his next door neighbor from like when he grew up. Yesterday, who is an executive producer at ESPN 610 in LA. And the first thing he asked me was like, how's my boy Brennan Eagles? That was, you know, I didn't have any secret insight into his recruitment because my guy Mike didn't know him that well. But yeah, yesterday, one of his like childhood next door neighbors was asking me about him. And I was like, man, as long as he stays healthy, Brennan Eagles, I think we're talking about a Sunday player that, you know, it's only about, I think, how big of a college player, like of a star he is and how productive he is. But I have no doubt that he'll be a guy that, if he stays healthy and stays on the straight and narrow, there's good reason why we should probably be buying his stock as well. Dustin, you got a bury the lead for us in this podcast? Do we need to ask about the NIT championship, bitches?
That feels like it's already been like weeks ago.
I think that was a month ago.
And then I can't think of anything spring game related that we haven't really covered. I think we've hit on all the specific players and position groups that I had in my list to watch closely. And then Jason mentioned the weather, which, yeah, I mean, last I looked, it was not terribly promising, but hopefully they get all that stuff in for the spring game. Other than that, though, I mean, I can't really think of anything spring game related. You know, basketball news wise, Jackson Hayes announced today that he will sign with an agent, go pro. Obviously, not a surprise there. So that's, you know, and for anybody that's like, oh, you know, you can sign with an agent now and come back. Well, while that's true, don't get your hopes up in this regard with Hayes from everything I've heard. So he'll be moving on, be the next one-and-done guy for Texas basketball, another big man that's going to go in the first round of the NBA draft. So that's kind of the latest with the basketball team. But spring game-wise, I think we've hit on pretty much everything. It's nice to discover a spring game where there just aren't these gigantic question marks all over, and especially for the program as a whole. I mean, it really does seem like this thing is moving in the right direction.
Well, let's get into some parting shots then. There's nothing wrong with having, you know, a 1 hour podcast. It's conventional. It's listener friendly. Anybody want to go first? By the way, Alex, you said before we came on that you didn't think you had a rant inside of you in part because of your allergies. But the whole point of last week's podcast was that you didn't have a rant last week, but you were supposed to have a rant this week because you did have the school board meeting. Or was that 2 weeks ago and I missed last week?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I can't rant about this goddamn school board because the reason why is because they could very well be listeners. And I want them to take my feedback seriously and give me what I want as far as this rezoning. There's a guy on our board dealing with the rezoning issue too, an AISD that I would be mega, mega tilted that he's dealing with, knowing where he lives and what schools he's talking about. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. These goddamn allergies. I mean, I could rant about them. It's like, when does it stop?
You sound awful.
When does it stop? Like, does it ever stop? First, it was the cedar. And then it was like the cold season or whatever. And now I swear to God, man, and the little tree, like the little pollinating things, the little tree pollen things that are falling down off of the live oak trees literally have my, like my whole driveway, my whole yard, or like my whole pool is covered in these guys. Let me tell you what these things did. They so many fell in my pool. Do you know what a pool skimmer is? Do you guys know what that is? The skimmer, like the thing that comes in and there's a little basket in there and it catches a bunch of shit before the water goes back into the pipe and into the filter and it filters back in, right? That's called a skimmer basket. The thing that holds up the skimmer basket literally broke and my skimmer basket fell through it. So I'm going to have to deal today with going up to Leslie's Pool Supplies where these people don't even know what the hell they're doing. And have to buy this little ring that goes around to hold in the pool skimmer basket because all of the pollen got in there and the force got so strong. And dude, I've been out there. I've been changing this thing out probably twice a day. It was probably the third time I'd gone out to change it. Whenever this thing had busted through, I'm constantly in there fishing around this stuff, getting it out there with two. I have to have two different kind of nets to get the pollen out. And now I have a broken – my pool is broken and I can't even turn it on because of it until I go get this new piece after the podcast. And then after that, I have the distinct pleasure of having to get out the goddamn leaf blower and go out and blow off all this pollen, not only from around the pool area but from around off all my decks, all this bullshit. And then once it's out of that, you can't even spray – you can't even blow the live oak leaves and the pollen into your grass. Because for one, it's too slippery. The live oak leaves are too slippery for your kids to walk on. And for two, they don't compost. They're not like pecan leaves or maple leaves or any of these leaves like I've had in my old houses where are these big ash leaves where they just fall. They can just leave them on your grass. You can mow over them. They turn up into little pieces of fucking leaf and turn it into compost. It goes right back into the earth. These live oak leaves don't do that. So after I do all this, I'm gonna have to blow the leaves, blow the pieces of pollen off. I'm going to have to go buy a goddamn gas or not a like an air mask to do it because I'm so allergic to this damn pollen. Then once I get done doing that, I got to take out the power washer and go power wash all my stonework because this shit will stain it if I don't get it done with it. Like if you want a house with lots of live oak trees and stuff like that, you just need to realize – what a pain in the absolute dick this is during the this month of the year. Whenever you thought that all the leaves have been gone, the leaves are supposed to shed back in fall, and they do, but they shed again with all this damn pollen in April, and it makes you sick, and it makes you have to do all this extra work. So that's my rant.
Those are kind of first world problems, aren't they?
A little bit, and you can skip cancel that pool service as a potential sponsor.
Yeah, Leslie's Pool Service.
It's funny. I was writing down my list of sponsors, and I'm up there at Leslie's so much that I actually put them down as one that I would suggest. Maybe not.
Fuck Leslie.
Yeah. Go ahead and cross them off.
I'll jump in. Like, kind of piggyback off Alex. Alex, I bought. I don't have near the problem you have, but I have a couple of live oaks in my backyard that drop leaves and all that pollen and shit. So, I bought. I ordered a Tractor Supply. Like my blower is also a vacuum. And it's a hose that you attach it to it. It's a hose that then goes over a trash can, and it basically deposits the leaves directly into the trash can for you, mulches them and deposits them. I was so excited. I was like, oh, it's going to make my job so much easier. Mind my kids.
I guarantee you that damn thing didn't work.
It was a piece of shit. It worked okay, but it basically took so long. It's like, I'm better off getting my kids out here and helping me rake, and we did that. Well, I took 13 bags of the big ass lawn and leaf bags to the curb yesterday for the trash. They didn't pick up a one of them. They said over five, they won't pick them up. It's like, God damn it. So I got, and it took a long time to lug 13. I think it might've been 15. I think it was whatever. It took a long time to lug all these bags to the curb. So I called my dad and their trash hadn't come yet. So my dad came over in his truck and we piled them all in his truck, took him to his neighborhood and dispersed increments of five at his place and all the neighbors down his street, and they came and picked them up. But yeah, I feel your pain, man. I got most of my work done, but that is a pain in the ass. But hey, it's part of, like, gets at first world problems. It just comes with the territory of having property. But
if it was true first world problems, I would be able to afford a crew to come out here and just do this shit.
Well, just look at
but you have a pool.
Yeah, they have a pool, but look at the bright side, Alex. Hey, as your kids get older, your workload lessens. My kids are 14, 13, 11, and 7. My 11-year-old, my two older ones, I started them doing yard work about 11 years old. And that's my daughters, too. My
wife, about the age, 11, and it's like quality, it's quality yard work. It's
quality enough for I pay them $5. Damn right, it's quality enough for $5. But I literally took a picture of my kids out there working. I had a beer in my hand, and I sent it to all my buddies. I'm like, having kids is finally paying off, man. But
that's great.
But my parting shot, I'll just kind of highlight this weekend's spring game visitor list. You know, I could go on for 15 minutes detailing it, but some pretty big names. You'll have the three offensive line commits. You'll have Hudson Card there. Bijan Robinson, the Rivals 100 running back out of Tucson, Arizona. He's coming in this weekend. Varquise Gums is a 2021 tight end. Texas is offered. Chad Lindbergh will be in town. The Brockermeyer brothers, defensive line, lots of heavy on the defensive line. Vernon Broughton, Alfred Collins, Princely Human Meelan, Prince Dorbu's a D-line slash linebacker. DB's Jahari Rogers, Xavier Alfred, Jaden Hullaby, the new Texas commitment, will be in there. Intriguing guy, kind of new to my radar and new to college coaches' radars even. Jalen Conyers is a athlete out of Groover, Texas. I got a Google Maps even where the hell that is. But this dude in the last 2 weeks has picked up offers from A&M, Oklahoma, USC, Ohio State, I think Oregon. I mean, anybody and everybody. So he's a guy who can play tight end. He can play defensive end. He's a big-bodied receiver. He plays some quarterback in high school. I think he's probably a tight end, defensive end at the next level. I would be surprised if he didn't get an offer this weekend while in town. So big visit weekend for Texas. I'm going to be at the game. I'll be eyeballing those guys. And then what I usually do is end up leaving about halftime so I can be home to work the phones once those guys leave campus. So keep an eye on it. I'll try to have some updates Saturday night. Most of that will probably happen on Sunday, but a big visit weekend for Texas with the orange-white game.
Who's left? Anwar. Jason and Alex took so long with their first world problem. I've lost track of who's spoken and who hasn't. Do you have any first world problems that you want to air your grievances over?
I will just say this. I hope the Ludacris concert on Saturday goes over well, because there's the potential for there to be a lot of parents getting kind of grimy and dirty out there on the lawn. Because I realize, you know what, Ketch? I realize, like, Ludacris is old, which means we're old. So, Ketch, all right, I looked it up, right? So, you remember, like, What's Your Fantasy? That was released in, like, 1999. Use a Ho, that was in, so someone's like, there was a song called Use a Ho. Yes, You a Ho, that was in 99 also. Roll Out was in 2001. So was Area Codes in 2001. And the classic Move, Bitch, Get Out the Way, Get Out the Way, Bitch, Get Out the Way, that was in 2001. But if there's a kid who's 17 years old on this visit, he was probably born in 2002, which means he may not have been exposed to Ludacris outside of the Fast and Furious movies. So it's a concert where you and I and Jason would probably be super hyped for. I'm just hoping that for Texas's sake, there's a young group of people who are really familiar with Luda, and this doesn't end up being like an old folks concert, but actually like the young people actually get into it.
His music is a bit dated. Like, I
had his Chicken and Beer CD way back in the day, and I that was like, that had to have been early high school.
I think that's 2003.
Yeah. Yeah, early high school.
But
yeah. That's
more for the fans, like people probably our age.
Use a Ho for the fans?
Well, not necessarily that, but I'm just saying it won't be for entertaining the recruits, because the recruits are going to be so busy touring facilities and doing all that shit that they probably won't be out there with Ludacris. But yeah, you're right. Anwar, he's going to have to be pretty selective with his playlist.
But that's the thing. Like, his playlist.
Ooh,
like,
bitch.
Those are his jams. Like, those are.
I play those, yes.
Those are his songs. Those are the songs people are going to come for. Fascinated.
If they don't play Move, Bitch during a Jordan Whittington touchdown, they've missed on an opportunity. Like, just start yelling it into the microphone.
How much you guys think they paid for Luda?
80. Easily.
You think 80?
I think he did 80.
I don't think they paid 80.
He got 80 at Georgia just like a couple of years ago.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Gee.
You know, Rick Ross is performing at Kansas.
I thought you guys were
$500,000 to show up.
Yeah. I thought you guys were going to get something like, you know, 20 G's or something. I was going to tell you there's no way. It's going to be like 50 at least, but 80.
Look, Google it. I'm pretty sure he, and there was a big controversy because part of his rider was that he also wanted condoms. And then Georgia provided him with like a bunch of condoms and alcohol, and they had to apologize for it. Apparently, they're not doing that. Texas is not going to do any of that. But it'd be interesting to see what his rider is. But I'm pretty sure he was in the 80s just a couple of years ago.
I need to see what his usual, like his most recent concert set list is. Because ultimately, if you pay $100,000 for Ludacris to come to your school and do a concert, and then you ask him to perform all the songs that won't offend anybody at the concert.
I don't know what he's playing.
I don't know what you're left with. I mean, at that point, you should have just got Rob Bass and let him sing twice, mix in some Joy and Pain, and then get out. I don't know.
Interesting. It's going to be really, really interesting. So, but he's still a good rapper, so I'm sure the young people be into it, but they're going to hear songs that they've never heard before. That's for sure.
the kids are going to be like, when did this come out?
You were conceived to that, actually.
Like, mommy and daddy were still children when that came out. So
your mom was wearing a miniskirt at the club, and this song was playing, and I grabbed her ass, and next thing you know, you were here.
Yeah, your mom was a boat hoe on Lake Travis and Ludacris all the time, and that's how we fell in love. Dustin, parting shot.
I can't think of anything.
N-I-T. N-I-T. Come on now.
I've got nothing. Didn't we do the NIT last podcast or no?
From today, right? It was last Thursday.
Oh, you're right. It was the 4th. Yeah. Oh, hey,
Catch. Can I say something real quick in 10 seconds? I was just on a radio show the other day, and someone asked me, would there be more people at the Texas spring football game, or were there more people at the NIT championship parade?
So you told us that on Slack, and you just told that story again just so you can get it on the air because it's so fucked up.
It's so fucked up. He was like, there'd be more people at the spring game than we're at the NIT championship parade.
Well, how many people do we think are going to be at the spring game? I mean, you know, the joke is the joke, but I'm curious about the crowd on Saturday. I feel like this should be a 40,000 type crowd, and I don't know that I believe in Texas fans enough that many will show up.
Yeah, with the weather, I don't know. They've done a good job promoting this and stuff, and they've turned it into an event as opposed to just a glorified scrimmage when all the good players are out of the game by early in the second half. So I don't know. I think that they'll get over 25, probably over 30. I don't know about 40 though.
Anybody else think it's even possible? Or are we talking about 25 to 35?
I think it'll be par for the course, whatever. I don't even know what that is. Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
Fair enough. Parting shots. Do I have a parting shot? Not really. My brain is still kind of scrambled from just April. So on that note, like do I have a rant? Not really. I would just simply say this. The OB letter jacket thread on Orange Bloods, the Letterman jacket, has been 10 times better and funnier than I thought it would be. I was worried that there would be 10, it'd be a 10 to 1 ratio of people who hated it versus loved it, but it seems more 50-50, which has made for some of the funniest responses on Orange Bloods in a while. The idea of the different patches that people can put on their letter jacket is fantastic. And Jason, sadly, I think it may lead to people who want to get banned on purpose more because they're going to want to buy their letter jacket so they can get like the band hammer times 5.
Band of honor.
You know, like UT Wiz could show up at the spring game next year with a letter jacket on with like a Siberia patch.
Yeah, it's got like a permaband one and like 5 times, 10 times. Yeah.
Catch hates me. Like you just all kinds of things like, you know, each cheese could probably have a letter jacket with 500 patches on it. including a Hall of Famer patch. Like, Ichiz is still one of the only, I think, 20 people that are officially in the Orange Bloods Hall of Fame for posters. Boy, people got pissed off about that. I might need to do that during a slow week again, add a second chapter of Hall of Fame posters while recapping the first list. I don't even know if I can remember who in the hell was on the list completely, but I think I remember the majority. Everybody, thanks for listening. Keep listening to the Yak. If you've missed anything from this week, we've all got spring game content podcasts up. We're all previewing our thoughts. It's more expanded. Jason mentioned earlier that he could go on for 15 minutes or so on football recruiting and the guys that are coming in. He does. Just go to Something's Brewing. Check out all of the content, free or paid, whichever you want to check out. And download the Yak app. It's all available there. It is a badass app. It is freshly minted and freshly released, and it answers all of those app questions and needs that we had upon our launch back in August. And on that note, thanks to our friends over at Ticket City, 1-800 sold out. Take advantage of your Orange Bloods discount by contacting them and letting them know, yo, I want my Orange Bloods discount. We'll do this again next week. Later.